Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 15 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levesey, and discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. This week, to commemorate our 15th episode, Comic Timing goes cosmic. That's right, Matt Summer and Matt Kramer stop on by to discuss our first ever 22 pages, Annihilation number 1. And remember, kids, it's written by Keith Giffen, because as stated by law, Keith Giffen must write every single major event except for Civil War. Here now, Comic Timing.
Well, we made it, folks. It is episode 15 of Comic Timing, and I hope you guys enjoyed the previous episode, episode 14.5, the special edition on Civil War and the delays, and one of the folks who joined me for that is back today for more, the man from the land of beer, he is Matt S.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey. What's going on, man?
Not too much. You know, we've got two Matts from the land of beer here, so it's going to be a party.
Exactly, and number two from Brewerland, he is Matthew Kramer. What's going on, Matthew?
Hello, not much.
Wow, so two Matts and an Ian and a pizza place today, so not too shabby. What we're going to be discussing today is the first ever 22 pages on Comic Timing, and that, of course, is Annihilation number 1. And I'm going to give you the quick preview for Annihilation straight from Marvel's website, so if they get anything wrong, we can blame Marvel. Annihilation comes to the Marvel Universe. The individual Annihilation miniseries, Nova, Super Skrull, Ronin, and Silver Surfer, have all led to this as the Annihilation wave makes its way for universal domination and utter destruction in Annihilation number 1. Mwahahaha. Annihilation begins, and already two heroes have fallen, and a long, proud empire is in shambles. Individually, the big guns of the cosmos have tried to defeat the Annihilation wave, but barely succeeded in even slowing it down. Now, heroes and villains alike must unite for an all-out war with Annihilus and his murdering hordes. Follow Nova, Drax, Silver Surfer, Galactus, Moondragon, and your other favorite cosmic characters as they fight for their lives against the terrors of the Negative Zone. Writer Keith Giffen and artist Andrea DeVito, along with Gabrielle Delotto, which is how you pronounce it, providing jaw-dropping covers, are ready to rock Marvel space to its core with this cosmic epic. And you've got an alternate cover by Brian Hitch, but that's not any part of the story there. So anyway, initial reactions about Annihilation number 1. Let's start it off with Mr. Kramer.
I thought it was pretty good. It was a lot better than I had expected it to be because the prologue was pretty so-so, and a couple of the minis were just outright bad. So I didn't expect a lot going in, but I was pleasantly surprised, at least.
Well, were there any of the minis that you actually enjoyed, or was it just all crap?
Nova was okay. I didn't read all of Super Skrull or Ronin, but okay. Silver Surfer was just crap.
Kramer, if you can go over those minis and tell us kind of what happened in those a little bit, because I only read the Annihilation number 1, so I'm a little behind the times on the other miniseries, so I don't know if you can maybe summarize a little bit what happened in each of those different ones that you know of.
Yeah, it's probably good idea.
The Silver Surfer one was where the Annihilus and the Annihilation Wave were hunting down the former Heralds of Galactus, and it was basically just a continuation of Keith Giffen's run on the Thanos series, and there were just a lot of continuity errors and a lot of things that didn't make any sense, but it was okay, and the end of it had Silver Surfer becoming Galactus Herald once again, so he'd get a power boost, and it just seemed completely out of character.
Yeah. So what other, like, continuity gaffes and different things did you see in there?
Airwalker was alive again.
Yeah, that was the major pain in the ass there, because I remember him dying.
Yeah, he's died about three different times.
Is that part of being a herald, by the way, that you know you're able to come back to life about four or five times before somebody actually realizes you're dead?
Yeah, that's probably about it. And Morg was there, and Morg had a body, because he was destroyed by the ultimate nullifier, so he was completely vaporized, but He had a body.
Okay.
And Galactus was Galactus again after being turned back into a human.
Well, that was temporary.
Right.
That was
right.
Temporary back in the pages of Wade and Marengo. I remember that they sort of did that to humanize him a little bit, but then at the end of that, he ended up becoming Galactus again. And by the way, since I didn't mention this at the very beginning, there will be spoilers in this episode, as if you couldn't tell by now, but pretty much anything that's associated to Annihilation Number 1 and Annihilation Number 1, we're going to be spoiling a bit on this episode. So if you haven't read it, go out there and read it, come back to the episode, and you'll be able to actually understand what we're saying. So, yeah, continue.
All right. And then with the Nova series, since he was the last surviving member of the Nova Corps, he had the Xandar world mind downloaded into his consciousness, so he has all of the collective memories of every other Nova ever.
Now, we talked a little bit about this before we started recording, but I was surprised. Like I said, I've been aware of this character for quite a long time, but I never had seen this whole Green Lantern Corps kind of take on the Nova character. But you said that that's always been in since the beginning. I mean, was that in the original Nova series?
That was in the Nova series, yeah. In fact, I remember, I didn't actually read the Nova series, but I actually remember seeing a couple covers back in the day, you know, like introducing the Nova Corps, you know.
And, all right, because I got to go through and read my Essential, I guess, that's been sitting on my shelf. All right, I thought that was kind of interesting. Now, didn't they just... Because I thought I remember some kind of miniseries back maybe in 2005 or something where they showed the Corps, and is that when they all got killed? Was that actually a series, or was this part of the same thing?
The Corps was wiped out in the Annihilation Prologue.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that was Annihilation Prologue number one. So
that's what I'm thinking about, all right.
That was the one shot that sort of led up to the miniseries, and then eventually you get to Annihilation number one, so... And in that also, that had Scott Collins' art, and that was pretty much the selling point for me, originally on Annihilation. I thought Scott Collins was going to come back, and when he didn't, I was a bit upset because his art actually transfers really well to the world of space, in my opinion. But again, I guess they really only had enough room to put him on that one issue because you really didn't see his art after that.
Right. All right, so he became the last son of the Nova Corps and got all these memories, and then what happened?
Then he was going crazy. He can't control all of the power, and so he finds himself at some other planet where it's being evacuated because the Annihilation Wave is coming, and he finds Quasar there and Drax, and they're trying to get the planet evacuated before the Annihilation Wave shows up. Drax tells Nova that he's going to help him control his powers, and then Annihilus shows up, absorbs Quasar, and it's over.
So Quasar is dead?
Supposedly.
That's not going to last. I can pretty much say that already, because Quasar, I mean, he might not get a lot of play in the Marvel Universe, but this is a guy who's been around for ages. And, I mean, to just get rid of him like that, I don't know.
Oh, in this day and age, man, anybody's game, you know? That seems to be the new trend, is to kill off heroes as gruesomely as possible, especially the kind of B and C listers.
Yeah,
but we can always hope. I always liked Quasar. I especially liked that run. Oh man, back in the 90s, like Greg Capullo was doing the art.
Yeah,
and I can't remember who was writing it at the time, but I really enjoyed that series for a while. I have to. Maybe we should come out clean with this kind of stuff, because I know that Kramer, you're a big Marvel cosmic fan, and I'm on the other end because I've just really never read any of this stuff. I don't know what it was. Maybe to me it was all about Marvel as a company seemed to always be about kind of like the personal, about making heroes kind of more human.
Mm-hmm.
And the cosmic stuff is at the direct opposite kind of spectrum, where it's bigger than life. You know, these aren't necessarily people that you can relate to. You know, Galactus doesn't have to get money to pay for his aunt's medicine or whatever. You know what I'm talking about. So I don't know. I just never picked up a lot of these series, even though I was a big Marvel fan back in the day. The last maybe cosmic event that I probably ever read out of Marvel was, I think, the Infinity Gauntlet.
Wow, so it's been a while for you.
So, yeah, a lot of these characters, a lot of these people, I mean, I know of them, but I don't know them that much. So hopefully you can answer all my stupid questions as we go through.
Well, not knowing the characters much and really not being into Cosmic that much, I mean, how did you enjoy Annihilation number one?
Well, we were talking about this a little bit beforehand, and my initial reaction is almost that this didn't really read to me like what I think of as a quote-unquote Marvel comic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's, like I said, because Keith Giffen is the busiest man in comics these days.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen this guy. I mean, we just saw him at Wizard World Chicago, and he's kind of a crotchety old, like, grandpa-looking sort of guy. And he's, man, I don't know what he's doing, if he got some energy or whatever, but he's doing all kinds of work for everybody. He's got his own company. He's working on Marvel's big event, working on DC's big event right now. So it's kind of crazy, but maybe it's subliminal because it's Giffen, and I associate Giffen with DC, but Annihilation really read to me like a DC book, and I don't know if I can really put that into words what I mean by that. Maybe more along the lines of just kind of the storytelling style, the look, the page breakdowns. It reminded me sort of the original Crisis.
Okay.
With the ideas of planets being destroyed, this thing coming from outside our universe, wiping out different planets. And again, maybe it's like the panel layouts are just kind of the Giffen style of writing, because usually, I don't know, it's not, I guess, generally what I would associate with kind of a Marvel sort of story. My initial take on this was, I'm not really sure how or where these characters developed into. Like, I was really surprised to see Nova or Richard Rider kind of being this badass Sergeant Fury kind of guy.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the series, and I wasn't sure if that was just me for not reading it in a long time, or if that was something new. It was interesting, I guess. This first issue is again, sort of like a Starship Troopers kind of thing, where it's constant action, constant battles, fighting a losing war against an enemy with greater numbers and greater power. It was kind of a ride. I mean, I'm not going to say I didn't love it. I didn't not love it. It's sort of interesting, I guess. I looked at it and thought, this is, you know, a lot of stuff that I'm not sure what's going on, but it's kind of a fun ride.
What do you think by that statement, Kramer, that it read more like a DC book than a Marvel book? I mean, would you agree with that statement?
It definitely had a different feel to it, and I think a lot of that is, for so long, Marvel's cosmic stuff tried to emulate everything that Jim Starlin had done in the 70s and then early 90s, so now they're just taking a step away from that, so of course it's going to feel like a complete different thing.
I can see where you're coming from with that, and I mean, the fact that Starlin's basically no longer associated with Marvel in any way, shape, or form after what happened with the Thanos series, I can pretty much understand where you're coming from with that. And at the same time, I mean, a lot of this stemmed from Giffen's Thanos series, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and do you feel that he even continued his own continuity properly, or do you feel he sort of took some liberties?
It really feels like it followed the stuff that was started in issues 7 to 12 of that series, when they brought Peter Quill back. They introduced the Fallen One, who was the first Herald of Galactus. It set up the Kiln and the Crunch, which were big things in the prologue. And it definitely feels like if you've read those six issues, you'll have a lot better feel for what's going on, especially in the Silver Surfer series.
Yeah, just as an aside, I mean, I guess this reveals how dim I am, I guess, but I did not have any idea that was actually supposed to be Thanos until somebody called him by name.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, he's got a completely different look to him.
Yeah, he's not in his old purple and blue suit that I associate with the character. And what's the deal with the little fairy chick that's on his shoulder all the time?
Screet? She's from the old, I don't know if you remember, the old Lunatics series from Marvel in the mid-90s. She's a Chaos Mite, whatever that is.
Man, I think that must have been when I stopped collecting comics for a while. I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, she's basically just another Keith Giffen creation that hadn't been in use for about 10 years. So he decided to bring her back.
So he basically just brought back everybody that he loves.
Pretty much.
Or people that he has created, at least. Did he create Star-Lord, or was that a character that was pre-existing?
Star-Lord was from the 70s, from those old Marvel magazines. He'd basically just been used a few times here and there as one of the many Marvel Green Lantern ripoffs.
Okay.
And he basically hasn't been seen since about the 80s.
Yeah, that was another question I had, because obviously I didn't know the name Peter Quill, and then in the book he makes sure to talk about, yeah, he used to be called Star-Lord, and I remember the name, but I had to go and do some Googling on this last night to figure out who this guy was. Has he had a lot of appearances outside of the 70s in different areas? Because I don't remember this guy really at all. Apparently, from the research, I mean, he started out, like you said, in the Marvel magazines, and he was kind of a, what was he, son, he's like a half-breed alien or something, like an Earth mother and some kind of alien father.
Right.
I mean, he had some kind of special space suit that gave him certain powers, and he had, this is my favorite, the element gun, which would shoot elemental stuff like water or dirt or fire. And I'm assuming then that he used that as sort of like the lanterns use their rings to
do different things.
And then somehow he lost his eye or something happened. And I don't know, maybe you can go into that a little bit. I mean, where else has he shown up in the last like 20 years?
He basically hasn't been seen since the 80s, and even then, it was just really random, scattered things, and his eye, it's a bionic eye that he added himself to allow for heightened vision, and he also has a computer chip in his head to allow for a perfect memory.
Okay.
And yeah.
So he basically just kept, basically gave, this is pretty much Star Lord like version 3.0 then, you know, like he's been upgrading himself for a while now.
Pretty much.
And what's, this is something else maybe you can talk about. It said something in the information I read that he was like in love with his spaceship or something. What was the deal with that?
He had this living spaceship that was named Ship. And I've never really been a fan of Star-Lord, so I don't know if he was in love with it, but it wouldn't surprise me, because I think Claremont and Byrne had a lot of stuff to do with him in the early 80s, so they could have thrown all of that stuff in there easily.
You just explained a lot right now by saying the words Claremont, Byrne, and Star-Lord, so that would not be the first person who suddenly was like in love with a machine or suddenly just had this really weird character shift or something along those lines, because I pretty much associate that with Claremont and Byrne. Not that I'm saying it's a bad thing, but they do like changing up their characters a lot.
Definitely.
Now, with Star-Lord, to me, I mean, if you want to go with the idea of this playing more like a DC book than a Marvel book, I feel that Nova has pretty much taken the role of Kyle / Hal, and Star-Lord is Guy. Because they were both sort of the Green Lantern archetypes, obviously, because with the Nova Corps and all that, obviously a bit of a play on the Green Lantern Corps, and before this, Nova was the inexperienced, basically newest member of the Nova Corps, who hadn't really done much with the Nova Corps, stayed on Earth a lot, so he was pretty much the Kyle Rayner type. And then, through Baptism of Fire in his Nova miniseries, was sort of forced to grow up and forced to be the Nova. And in the process, became sort of the Hal Jordan type here. So, I mean, you pretty much got at least three Green Lantern archetypes here, only in two different people.
Definitely. And Star-Lord was also supposed to be the first member of the Star-Lords. So there was even supposed to be a lot of them, but they went nowhere. So
the way that he's writing Star-Lord in this first issue, he's just kind of the wisecracking guy that's in the background as an assistant. Now, he's also, you know, I'm not going to talk about my past. I'm not going to talk about what happened. I'm assuming that he's going to come to more prominence maybe and start actually doing something as Star-Lord sometime in the next couple of issues.
Yeah, well, he won't even allow himself to be called Star-Lord at this point, which is actually sort of interesting, because that pretty much says that there was some sort of cataclysmic event possibly associated with Annihilation, possibly before that, that I'm thinking he might have very well caused.
Right. That was kind of skirted over in the Thanos series.
Okay.
That the Fallen One is Galactus's first herald, and he was held in prison at the Kiln, which was destroyed in the Annihilation prologue. And every now and then, the Fallen One would escape and go after Galactus, and they'd have to send a bounty hunter after him. And one of these times, the bounty hunter to go after him was Star-Lord, and he somehow caused 350,000 deaths.
Oh my God.
Capturing him. And then when he brought the Fallen One back, he was imprisoned too. And that's basically all that they've said. I'm sure there are more details that they'll probably get into, but for now, that's all we know.
And at the same time, you just added another Green Lantern archetype to it, so both of them are basically two Green Lanterns combined, because he's got the whole John Stewart complex of causing a major amount of deaths, and now he's going through the guilt.
Definitely.
So this is the Green Lantern core for Marvel, basically.
In some ways, I guess. I don't know. Like I said, for me, I don't know if we want to go back over this, if we want to go over the plot a little bit more, or how we want to kind of approach this.
We're going to get to everything, basically, so.
Okay. It's sort of interesting. I don't know. A lot of these people, again, maybe before we get started, I'll ask Kramer, I'll pick your brain a couple more times with some of these characters. Now, what's the deal with this Runaways kind of character that's hanging around with Drax?
She is from the Drax miniseries that was, of course, by Giffen.
What a shock.
And basically, Drax was a prisoner for some reason, and then their prison ship was taken over by Pybok and Lunatic, and it crashed in a town in Alaska, and then Drax was given to the girl by the Pybok, who's also the Power Skrull, and then she's basically just hanging around him now.
Okay.
All right, yeah, I was like, okay, this character doesn't seem to fit in this whole war zone area. I'm guessing that she's just being used sort of for comic relief, as she says something like, I think that Kree guy must have molested me at one point in the story. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, well, at the same time, there's always got to be at least one of those young, stereotypical characters in a Keith Giffen story, and she's basically just playing that part in this one. The younger type, at least.
No, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, and I mean, not that I'm saying that. Well, okay, fine. Every single writer has their quirks. You know, every single writer has their, okay, I'm going to introduce this. Giffen is very much known for introducing the random girl into the storylines. And this is just the random girl here. But what do you think about this major change in Drax? I mean, obviously the last time we saw Drax was, well, Drax the Destroyer. And now he is very much not that Drax anymore. I mean, is he eventually going to become Drax the Destroyer again? Or do you feel this is sort of just a heroic turn for him?
I'm not really too sure about what they've got going for him. And I'm not a big fan of this current incarnation.
Okay.
But then again, his old incarnation, the only purpose he had was to destroy Thanos. So either way, he doesn't have a lot of character to begin with.
Do you feel he has more character this way than he originally did? Or
definitely. Okay. Definitely.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, then you've just gave him at least one positive, even if you're not too big of a fan of the incarnation of it. And how about with Ronan? I mean, obviously, Ronan the Accuser has also gone through many a character shift over the years, and now he seems to be exiled by his people. And he was one of the key members of the Kree-Skrull War once upon a time, and without the Skrull around, it all of a sudden sort of seems as if, well, the Kree have just sort of cast him to the side, and, you know, that's it with Ronan. We're going to ignore him, except for the soldiers themselves, who seem to still want to take orders from him.
Well, they actually said, I mean, he set it up in the dialogue that it's not just that they want to ignore him, that they invented some trumped-up charges to get him taken out or to put in jail or something. I don't know. It seems like he's sort of an outcast from the society. And so, I don't know, maybe, again, this is all I know, so maybe, Kramer, if you have any other information on that.
Yeah, I don't really have a lot of information about that either, because I've never really been too knowledgeable about Ronan, other than he was just like a fascist almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hate when people are too judgmental. He's really accusatory quite a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn accuser. And that's another thing also. How many different space characters in Marvel have a the insert title here in their name? You know, that just seems to be the running thing for Marvel Comics.
Yeah, it definitely does seem to be like that. Drax the Destroyer.
Ronan the Accuser. I mean, I'm waiting for, you know, like Pippin the Waiter, you know?
Pip the Troll.
Exactly. And, well, Thanos, he has gone through many a change, both inside of Giffen's own series and here. And you've got him sort of, like, it seems like he's sort of reached his zen. And this seems to be something that Thanos was looking for most of his time in the Marvel Comics. And now that he's found it, it's sort of more frightening to me now that he's not all insane and, you know, screaming and shouting and all that, that he's sort of at peace with himself. It actually seems a bit more maniacal now.
Definitely, yeah.
He's got, I mean, to me, he, again, when I finally figured out who he was supposed to be in the story, he has kind of almost like a Lex Luthor-y sort of vibe in this book, where he's just sort of not really involved, but kind of behind the scenes. He's working, teaming up with Annihilus for some reason. Now, I mean, what's Thanos' game in this? To just get rid of Galactus? Or, I mean, what's his goal in teaming up with this Annihilation wave?
I don't think we really know yet.
Thanos, his goals are never known until they actually go into effect. That's really always been the case with the character. He's not one to really explain why he's doing things until it's actually done. And in the past, he's also teamed up with people and not really revealed things until the very last second as to why he's even there. So I'd expect maybe by issue 3 of the series, we might actually discover, you know, why Thanos is there. But until then, it's yet another mystery that's going to have to be solved by the series.
Right.
Which is what I like about the character, actually. I like that he's, you know, mysterious, and I'm also wondering whether or not he's actually under the influence of this little fairy that seems to be with him. Like, whether or not she has some sort of calming effect on him that's sort of crafted him into this new version of Thanos, or whether or not she's just there, because we've never seen a Thanos like this until she showed up.
Right. That could possibly be something that's associated with her character, but I'm not really that familiar with that. But that's a good theory.
Many a theory can be crafted from this series, which is, I guess you can, well, you can certainly call that a positive of most series, you know? I mean, if they do get you thinking about what's coming next, then obviously you're going to want to go out there and buy at least the next couple of issues to sort of figure that out, but we're just going to have to wait and see here. Let's talk a little bit about the art, actually, because we've talked about Giffen's writing so far, but haven't really talked too much about the art side. I mean, I enjoyed DeVito's art here, but again, I was a real fan of Scott Collins' work in the prologue, and I was sort of looking for something a bit more Collins-esque, but obviously DeVito is DeVito. So, I mean, what did you guys think of the art?
I thought it was pretty good. I wasn't a fan of the more cartoony feel from the Collins prologue issues, and if they want to make this a more serious book, then it really does make sense that they have a more realistic style.
Okay.
I don't want to keep beating the same drum with this comparison over and over again, but, you know, again, part of the reason why I thought this felt sort of like a DC book is the art style and the way that it's laid out, and just and I don't know if Giffen did breakdowns on this book at all, or you know, I don't know how he writes, if he writes really tight descriptions for what kind of panels he's looking for. I mean, the art's decent. It's not maybe what I'd call superstar quality, but it's not far off. I mean, it's pretty solid. He's got a lot of stuff that he's working with here, a lot of different bugs or whatever to draw in these battle scenes, a lot of different crazy, freaky aliens. And I think it comes off pretty well. It's definitely dark in color also. I mean, it's got this kind of really dark mood to the artwork. And I think, I haven't really heard of this guy before or seen the artwork before, I don't think, in anything. But, I don't know. I think it's pretty solid stuff.
Well, the darkness that you just mentioned also is something that you don't usually expect to see with space stories associated with Marvel Comics. You usually get sort of the brighter aspect of it to sort of show the, you know, the nature of space and the, you know, the vastness out there. But instead, you get sort of the complete opposite here with this particular comic. And it certainly works for the story. But at the same time, it sort of goes with your idea of that this isn't the typical Marvel comic here. Because we've never really seen this before out of a cosmic comic before, especially with the art.
I haven't, anyway. I don't know. Again, like, I'm not the most experienced person to ask about this, but I don't know. I was really surprised. When I picked this up, I didn't really know what I was going to think, coming in blind, as it were, without having read the other minis. I paged through some of them, and I remember that the prologue, and I think maybe like Kramer, I wasn't too impressed with that art style in the prologue, so
okay.
This is definitely, for a much more serious kind of story, this is, I hate to say, more realistic art style when you're drawing crazy, you know, giant monsters and things, but yeah, I think this art fits the tone of the story really well, and it works. I like this more than I thought I was going to like this story.
Now, about Annihilus, I mean, Annihilus has never really been the main villain in a series before. I mean, you've gotten him as the sort of the fill-in villain in Fantastic Four before. You've seen him in a couple of different Negative Zone stories, but nothing really too severe out of Annihilus before this. And now you've got him with this whole Annihilation wave, and Marvel giving him sort of a kick. I mean, do you feel he's deserving of that kick? I mean, do you feel he's been filling the role of the villain so far pretty well here? Because he's always seemed, and not to use the word hokey too much here, but he's always seemed a bit hokey to me in the way he's been written in Fantastic Four before. This is the first time I've actually really seen him as anywhere near menacing.
Right. He's always just kind of been a throwaway villain, and he's always easily defeated by the Fantastic Four, but now he's got a giant power boost, and I'm not really sure if he's quote-unquote deserving of this, but if they can write a good story about it, I'm fine with it.
What do you think, Matt?
I don't even remember the last time I saw a story with Annihilus involved, to tell you the truth. My take on him in this story is he seems to me kind of like the preening sort of buffoony, I'm going to kill you all kind of guy who's maybe set up to be the obvious villain,
yeah,
with a much more subtle villain of Thanos being behind, kind of manipulating him maybe. He's kind of a little over the top, I guess, right now in his villainy, I suppose. I want to say it's, you know, kind of like the typical ranting and raving sort of villain.
Yeah. Well, with lines like intolerable, Extrepia fallen at the hands of heralds, I have order terminated, and a litany of excuses, you know, and
yeah, exactly,
things along those lines.
I was looking just at that page, too, right now.
Yeah.
And his,
talk about ranting and raving.
As long as we're on that page, I guess, you know, what's up with that ship with, like, the tongue, the teeth or whatever, the mandibles coming out of there? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's,
I'm
a
not
negative
a big
zone
fan.
Ship. That's a Negative Zone ship, because yeah,
not a big
I've seen
fan
weird
of that
things
kind of
like
stuff.
That before, yeah. I guess to be in the Negative Zone, you got to have two razors on top of you. I don't know. But
well, your ships have to look like yourself, I guess. You have to look like a bug. It'd be funny if the human ships look like a big human or something that floats.
Exactly. Yeah, you never really see that unless it's like a giant like Zord or something like that. Not many human ships, but every single character always seems to have a ship with either their emblem on it or the head of themselves on it. It's like,
that was one of the things I thought was, yeah, that was one of the things I thought was really corny about the Nova Corps. They were all flying around in these like Nova helmet spaceships. But that's really kind of beside the point. I mean, I think the art style in this, it's drawn detailed enough where it doesn't necessarily look totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I think it pulls it off pretty well. I'm a little like, maybe you guys can school me on this, because again, I'm not that knowledgeable about these characters, but I mean, what's, aside from being the ruler of the Negative Zone or whatever, I mean, what is Annihilus's, what's his thing? What does he do? Does he have special powers or special abilities other than ranting and raving, or what's his deal?
He has the cosmic control rod, which I think it has something to do with the cosmic energy, and yeah, I don't really know what a lot of his abilities and stuff are.
Is that related to the cosmic cube in any way?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Everything's related to the cosmic cube in Marvel Comics.
Exactly.
Everything. Just like Scarlet Witch can be controlling everything, same thing with the cosmic cube.
Gotcha.
Annihilus in the past, I mean, his main idea is he's sort of, well, because he's the dictator, you know, he can rile up these giant armies, and you know, he can get these folks to his side in a matter of minutes and all that, because he has so much military power. So not only does he have this cosmic rod thing, but the fact that he can be controlling all these people is a major selling point for Annihilus.
Right. And I'm not sure if you read the Silver Surfer series, Ian, if you notice that in that series, Annihilus's ship, his, like, where he was, it was drawn exactly like the throne room of the Death Star from Return of the Jedi.
God. Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that.
So I think they might be trying to set him up in an emperor type role.
Darth Annihilus.
Yes.
Annihilus Vader. Hell yeah. Oh, brilliant right there. Yeah, but and also Marvel is known for doing that with their ships and with their throne rooms and all that. They put in the random references there that, you know, it'll please the geeks, and at the same time you're thinking to yourselves, "Oh god, you know, not again."
Yeah.
So have we seen this kind of thing before with these kind of like hive mind linked queen characters in these stories before?
This is the first time I've ever seen it.
Yeah, that's right. The first time for me too.
I read a lot of, and I teach a science fiction class in my high school, and one of the books that we do every semester is Ender's Game.
Okay.
I don't know if any of you guys ever read that book by Orson Scott Card, but it struck me it's very similarly set up, where there's a invasion of aliens, insectoid kind of aliens, with individual queens that control all the individual soldiers, and that came to my mind as I was reading through the story. Not necessarily that it's a ripoff or anything, but I just I haven't really seen this before, and so I wasn't sure if this is something new or if it's an old hat. Because they all have kind of like corny Kirby-esque sort of names.
Yeah.
Like Xperia and Extermina and all these weird kind of things like that. So, I thought maybe they'd been around for a while.
Well, actually, I'm glad you mentioned the Kirby thing, because that actually sort of led towards one of my next questions. I mean, after the Starlin era and all that, that sort of distanced itself to the old-fashioned Kirby-esque cosmic world. I mean, do you feel Marvel's trying to get back to their roots here with Annihilation and all that, trying to make the space world similar to the sort of thing that Kirby set up back in the day?
It probably could definitely be used as that, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, to me, it looks like that they're trying desperately to make their cosmic stories, like, scary and menacing.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't know if they've ever done that before quite as much. That might have been part of it. You know, we talked about this before, that for me, and I remember when I was a kid, when I first started reading comics, and maybe why I never really got into these stories, is that Marvel's cosmic stuff is kind of silly. These, you know, big gigantic guys and, these different guys like so-and-so, the so-and-so. You know, it's kind of hard to take them seriously, and I think this series, at least from this first issue, it seems like what they're trying to do is say, you know, this is deadly serious. All these guys are, you know, really, you shouldn't really laugh at these characters anymore. You know, they're not silly. They're really badass.
Well, it's certainly... like, it's certainly necessary to make your characters feel badass as opposed to laughable, because unless you're making a parody book, then it's really hard to take anybody seriously when they're doing absolutely nothing worth the menacing nature of their character.
Right. I don't mean to just, you know, say that they're laughable as an insult or anything. A lot of the stuff, a lot of the Kirby cosmic stuff is, you know, in today's eyes, in 2006, you know, it doesn't seem, you know, what we're doing right now in the comic industry, dark sells. And so I think that we're seeing here an intentional darkening of these cosmic characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, with the whole thing about the Heralds, obviously that's one of the driving factors here. I mean... Is he using the Heralds? I mean, is Annihilus using the Heralds to sort of fuel his attack, or do you feel there's some sort of extra secret method to trying to get the power of Galactus on his side here?
From what it looked like in the Silver Surfer miniseries, is that he's trying to discover the biological aspect of the cosmic power, so he's probably trying to create an army of heralds that would fight for him.
Okay.
I don't know if, maybe again, I'm not reading that miniseries, maybe I missed that, because in the first issue here, really all we see that he is demanding that they be captured alive for some reason. I think that's Thanos that's asking for them to be captured. Is that correct?
Yes,
okay, so he's from his dialogue when he's talking to Annihilus, it seems like he's doing some kind of experiment. You requested that I discover the biological application of cosmic power, whatever that really means. And so it looks like he's trying to capture these guys for Thanos' whatever he's up to. Now, Fire Lord, basically, in this book, I don't know, we are meant to assume that he destroyed or killed this queen, and then he gets kind of wiped out and goes into some state of, you know, suspended animation or what have you. And the other heralds, I don't know, they're floating around doing some stuff in space, but we don't get too much on them in this issue. So I'm not sure what that is going towards or what they're trying to do with it. Thanos apparently decides that he's got enough information and they don't need the heralds anymore. And Annihilus changes his mind. It's this open season on all those guys, so...
I mean, do you think the heralds are going to make it out of here alive? I mean, is this sort of a way to thin the roots, as it were, for the heralds? I mean, because there's like, you know, 80,000 different heralds running around in the Marvel comics. You know, Galactus has a new herald every time he sneezes. You know, and back in the day, it was pretty much, you know, Silver Surfer or bust. And then he eventually started getting more of the more heralds, you know. They'd have a fight and, you know, they'd break up for a while and then get back together. It's like one giant cosmic relationship here. Do you feel that they're trying to return the Silver Surfer to the prominence he once had as one of the only heralds around in the Marvel U?
Yeah, I can see that, because from all of the heralds that are currently around, out of all the heralds that Galactus has ever had, the only one that's the only ones that are dead are Nova and Morg. And you'd think with someone with Galactus's level of powers, he wouldn't just leave all of these people who have betrayed him to fly around and cause him trouble in the future. Because it's been shown that he can take away the power also, so, yeah. It seems like they're trying to thin the herd a little.
And also, you know, I hate to be a conspiracy sort of theorist guy, but remember that coming up fairly soon, we're going to have the second Fantastic Four film, which is going to star the Silver Surfer.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, you know, whether that's just a coincidence that they're putting him back with Galactus and trying to get that aligned with the film, I don't know if that's the case or not, but that probably does have something to do with it anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd say so. I would certainly actually, I would not be surprised at all, now that I think about it, if this is one of the reasons why they're doing that, because, well, quite frankly, if you're going to have Silver Surfer as a herald of Galactus in the movie, well, what better way to make it feel as if this is important if you made him a herald of Galactus in the books again?
One of the things, again, we talked about this a little bit before we started the show. Kramer, can you go over this a little bit? Because I was confused that we have the Silver Surfer in this story and in the mini, and yet he's also one of the little gladiator guys on the Planet Hulk storyline right now. So how does that fit into the continuity?
Everything that was in Annihilation had a timeline set up with a date in relationship to Annihilation Day, which is where the kiln was destroyed. And it seems that the Silver Surfer was on the Planet Hulk stuff about a week before Annihilation started, which is probably about the same time that the Civil War started.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense there, actually, because, well, it was a completely different Silver Surfer in that Planet Hulk arc. I mean, you saw him, he was much more lighthearted, and he seemed to be connecting very well with Hulk. I have a feeling this day and age, with the Silver Surfer and the change in his attitude in Annihilation and all that, getting back with Galactus, I'm not sure he'd be nearly as chummy-chummy with the Hulk.
Yeah, definitely. And this issue, issue number one, takes place 6 months after the prologue. So that's about 4 months ahead in Marvel time. So this is actually probably taking place after Civil War itself even ends.
Okay. Which actually, that's gonna leave a good question, because after Annihilation's over and all that, I mean, are we going to see some of these characters perhaps return to Earth? Well, Nova especially, because Nova was a member of the New Warriors. And with the whole thing going on in the Marvel U now, with Civil War, I mean, Nova's going to return to Earth, and some of his buddies are going to be, you know, Kaputsky, and Speedball is in the middle of, guess where, the Negative Zone, and right away I'm thinking to myself, this is starting to make sense here, because Annihilus was upset that the universe was invading his space in the Negative Zone. Well, this little area that they set up in Civil War, you know, the little prison, could very well be part of that, because they're invading on his airspace here.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that Civil War in regards to this story, because this, you know, don't you think if Annihilation is going on, I mean, isn't Civil War kind of stupid? That these guys are, you know, like, they're arguing about registration when there's this huge, like, death invasion wave that's coming. This is, like, the FF's bread and butter. They should be all over this whole thing here. But, you know, I guess I'm kind of glad that these two events are being kept separate from each other.
Yeah. Well, also, yeah. Because you'd have Reed Richards off in space probably, you know, assisting with this as opposed to, you know, building a giant prison in the middle of nowhere.
So, yeah, I guess maybe it makes more sense if you don't think about it. Because they should be. I mean, Earth's heroes should be involved in such a deadly threat as this. But, again, you know, I know this focusing on the cosmic characters, and the other guys are too busy arguing about registration to worry about a giant alien death wave that's coming to destroy the universe.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, now that I think about it, it's sort of like, to sort of draw this analogy to it, when a catastrophic event happens in your neighborhood, and say about 3,000 miles away, a cataclysmic event happens, you know, completely away from where you are, which one do you deal with first? Do you deal with the one in your neighborhood, or do you deal with the one that's far away? Obviously, you go neighborhood first. So, for Earth...
Well, possibly, you know, except, yeah. You know, you gotta go with what's more important here. I mean,
yeah,
you're not gonna fight your neighborhood gang if, you know, your country's being invaded. Everybody has to, you know, you think this is a much greater threat to everyone on Earth, and I almost sort of wish that they would have something in this story that said that, you know, we lost contact with Earth, we can't get a hold of any of those guys, or something, at least. But, you know, if they wanted to fit together, maybe to explain why no one's involved, really, with this storyline so far. Maybe I'm just nitpicking.
Well, how far away from Earth is this all taking place? That's the question.
No idea.
Exactly.
Well, we're on Daedalus 5, wherever that happens to be. I don't know.
Somebody bring up their cosmic map of the Marvel Universe, and we'll be able to find that out.
But it's like I said, this is a very, like, original Crisis feel with you know, this giant wave engulfing planets and causing problems. And you think that this would be something that they'd normally, if it wasn't just supposed to be a, you know, a cosmic-only character event.
Yeah.
Some of the other heroes would be all over this, but I guess we can't they're not, and so I just might as well just let that point go.
Well, we've got at least one coming, because in the solicit that I read at the beginning of the show, they mentioned Moondragon, and Moondragon's not in this at all. So at least we've got Moondragon coming up, which also means that I'm almost positive that we're going to see the sister of Genus Vell, the new Captain Marvel. I'm almost positive that she's going to be showing up in this series at one point or another, because they mention her in the little dossier file that they put at the end of the Nova series. And, like, they had little biographies. And I've heard things about a new Captain Marvel appearing in Annihilation at one point or another. So, and she was introduced in the Peter David run of Captain Marvel when Genus Vell was Captain Marvel. So I wouldn't be shocked if we at least see Captain Marvel, who is associated with Earth, even though he's Kree, and Moondragon, who has been a member of the Avengers, at least involved with this sometime soon.
Right. Well, this is a whole all the traditional space enemies, as we can see in this book, are working together. You got Kree and Skrull fighting side by side. We have mentions of the Shi'ar, but we haven't seen them yet in this story. I mean, this is basically everybody, and this is what I was talking about before. All when there's an outside force, you know, that people make up their differences, and they fight together to get rid of that outside force. And then once that's done, then they go back to fighting each other again.
Right.
So far, I mean, we've seen everybody, so that would not surprise me. Any quote unquote cosmic or alien character.
Yeah, probably the biggest person we haven't seen so far is Adam Warlock.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, that's a good point. I've been wondering where the hell he was.
Yeah, the last time that I remember seeing him was in the Warlocks miniseries from a couple of years ago that had the third Warlock character, and then they took off. But I don't really know if that was in continuity or not. And if that wasn't, then the last time we saw him was in the Jim Starlin issues of the Thanos series, where he basically was saying, congratulations for not being a bad guy anymore.
Really? Well, doesn't Warlock have his whole cocoon thing going on, where, like, he gets in a cocoon and then comes on out and he's, you know, Warlock version 8.7 as opposed to the previous version? Who knows? Maybe he's in his cocoon right now.
Yeah.
It's too easy with that character. You know?
Yeah, like exactly.
Whenever you don't see him. Oh, no, he's in his cocoon. That's why he wasn't around. Oh, okay. Interesting. Guy on his magnitude should be around.
What do we want to make of, I don't know if you want to get to this or not yet, but since you said this is a spoiler-filled show,
yeah.
Do you want to talk about the oh shit moment of the story?
Let's go with the oh shit moment. Yeah, we're getting close to about an hour here anyway. So yeah, let's get to the oh shit moment. But before we do that, are there any traitors in the ranks with Nova's bunch? Because there are a couple of the members of the team that seem like they're a bit shady and might very well end up with Annihilus' guys eventually. I mean, do you feel like they're all there for the right reasons, or do you feel there might actually be a traitor in their midst?
I wouldn't be surprised if Gamora were a possible traitor due to her relationship with Thanos. Mm-hmm. And we don't really know where Peter Quill stands. But then again, Thanos could be a traitor to Annihilus also and have his own agenda. So I wouldn't be surprised if there are some traitors somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, dollars to donuts. And it seems to me that Thanos is playing Annihilus to get his own ends, whatever he wants. So I think that eventually we're going to see him step up. You know, with Annihilus kind of maybe getting killed or something happening to him. I don't know, just a prediction, but I could be wrong.
And then Thanos could have a cosmic rod.
Every guy needs one.
Exactly. speaking of which, let's get to that oh shit moment finally. Galactus Befallen. Now, how many times now is this? This is about, like, number 7 or 8 where Galactus has ended up, quote-unquote, getting killed and come back. I mean, it happened in the pages of Fantastic Four a couple times. It happened in the pages of the Silver Surfer book a couple times. Even the Silver Surfer ended up dead once upon a time, and now it looks like he might be fallen here. But obviously that's not the case. And do you think this is the last we've seen from Galactus? I highly doubt that.
Yeah, I highly doubt that as well, because I didn't even realize that that was supposed to be the big moment of the book. I was like, okay, again, this has happened again.
Well, I say that sort of in quotes, you know. It seems like that they were intending this to be the big moment in the story, and maybe that's just the fault of comics in general, that we're so used to people getting messed up and coming back. But we have these two, and I don't know what the name for these people are, but we have this Ancient One, Aegis, and Tenebris of the Darkness.
Right.
Basically two big-ass giant cosmic guys who put the hurt on Silver Surfer. He's all cracked. He's a bunch of cracks in his body. And, we see Galactus go down shooting stuff out of his mouth like he's dead or something. And we basically have a feeling that it's set up like, okay, now we're really screwed. The war is really over. We're really doomed. We have Thanos gloating over the fallen Surfer and the fallen Galactus. And, yeah, Richard Rider Nova's not too happy, and he ends up, God help us.
Yeah. which, I mean, mind you, the fact that he's believing that this is a turning point in the war obviously makes us think, oh, hey, this could be a turning point in the war. But at the same time, is Galactus, you know, being dead at this point really the selling point for the end of the war here? I mean, I know Galactus is powerful. I know that he's been a major part of the whole Annihilation event so far with the miniseries and all that. I know that the Heralds also have a lot to do with that. But, I mean, there are other cosmic folks out there. I mean, meanwhile, they haven't mentioned the Celestials at all so far. I'm thinking that they might end up being a part of this war at one point or another, maybe sticking their hand in and preserving their part of this all, because from what I know about the Celestials, the universe is theirs, basically. So I wouldn't be shocked if they step in.
And Aegis and Tenebros, they both they have a very Celestial look to them.
Yeah.
So is this, I mean, I kind of assume that these are just older characters that I didn't know who they were. Is this the first time we've seen them before?
They were in the Silver Surfer miniseries.
Oh, okay, the Annihilus lead-up, I mean, the Annihilation lead-up series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, before then, I'm not sure if they were actually around, but...
But yeah, like Kramer said, I looked at these, yeah, they seem like celestially looking kind of guys. I just assumed that they had some older characters that I hadn't really seen or heard of before.
Well, that also goes with the celestial nature of Galactus himself. I mean, there have been so many different origin stories about Galactus in the past, but I know that one of them, once upon a time, was that he got his powers from the Celestials. And that would explain why his heralds sort of had a bit of a celestial look to them, at least some of them, at least, especially that first herald, the Fallen, that's been mentioned in the past. So, I mean, if his power is from the Celestials, again, I'm not sure whether or not they still go with that theory or not, but it would sort of make sense that the Celestials would then be drawn over when somebody that was, you know, basically fed by their abilities falls.
Right, right.
So I don't know. Obviously, we're meant to think that this falling, this end of the first issue is some bad mojo. We see those two ancient ones standing there with huge ass horde of ships and invasion forces in the background, and obviously Thanos is up to something with getting the Silver Surfer. Maybe that's why. No, I'm trying to think. No, that can't be why, because the timeline doesn't work out. I was going to say maybe that's why he doesn't need any of the other heralds anymore.
Yeah.
But this wouldn't have taken place until after he'd already talked to Annihilus, so that doesn't really play out.
Yeah.
But he's up to something. That's all we know.
Of course. And as always, Thanos is always up to something. he's always got something in his back pocket ready to roll out, so not much of a shock there. Were you guys readers of the She-Hulk Dan Slott series at all, out of curiosity?
No,
okay. I wasn't either. I read the Byrne issues, and I haven't really read the Slott stuff.
Okay, because the reason I asked that is because there was a glimpse of She-Hulk's future that involved the Watchers and a whole bunch of different heroes on like this barren planet, and apparently the Watchers have some sort of giant like war going on. And from what I've heard, this might very well be the Dan Slott led story that's going to be coming out after Civil War that might somehow have something to do with this. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, what happens in Annihilation could very well be the setup for that also, because another, you know, cosmic group of characters that we haven't seen at all are the Watchers.
Right, right.
I mean, do you feel that the Watchers might get involved at this point, at one point or another? Obviously, they're not supposed to, because they're quote-unquote not supposed to be, you know, in any sort, way, shape, or form affecting what happens in their own known sectors, but well, their known sectors might not exist anymore if this Annihilation wave actually hits.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised if they get involved. They always get involved.
These big-headed meddlers.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't, when's the last time we've seen Uatu in a comic?
It's been a while.
I think he was in Civil War number one.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, he popped down for a second and basically said, "Hey, guys, you're all screwed." And then popped away. Because he's Uatu, he does that.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Okay.
Yeah. But that was just as, like, a warning sign. Him actually getting involved has been a long time now, since, like, the 90s, basically, with the
right.
FF involvement that he had for a while. I mean, the Watchers could be a pretty important part of this series, but because it's only issue one, we really don't know what's going to happen here. And I'd like to see them get involved, but then again, I'd also like to see the Celestials get involved. There's so much you could do with this series. And this issue one sets you up where you're really interested in what happens next, but they're really going to have to deliver also. Because if the next issue is crap, I'm going to be really disappointed. You know, like, you set yourself up really well here. Give him better deliver.
Yeah.
That's always the tough part. On the front cover, is that supposed to be Moondragon?
Let's see here.
I see bald chick, and I think Moondragon, so I don't know if that's...
Yeah, that's she's worn right. armor similar to that in the past, actually, so...
Yeah, all right. I was wondering that as well.
Why is she on the cover if she's not even in this book? I'm so disturbed.
Don't you love it when they do that?
Yeah, with all the Ronin appearances on all those new Avengers covers.
Man.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of funny. I don't know why this just struck me, and I know this is two different tones and different stories, but I was wondering if we're going to see like the Keith Giffen Defenders style Silver Surfer in the story. You know, is he going to wake up and want to go surfing on the beach with California stoners or whatever?
Well, that much you know is certainly not in continuity with the Marvel Universe. That much you certainly know. After this, you know for certain that stuff never happened. Because to go from one major extreme to another like that, ooh, that would take a lot of explanation.
just ignore it.
he was riding through the marijuana field and all of a sudden just got an urge to surf with his surfing brethren.
Well, that just, I guess, goes to show you that Keith Giffen is everywhere.
Exactly. And he's got every single style. And, I mean, this sort of proves here, well, 52 has been proving this also, that he can do the funny, and he can do the epic. And he's certainly crafting an epic here. And it's how often is it where you get to say that a guy like Keith Giffen, or a guy, period, has crafted two of the biggest events in comic books for two of the biggest comic book companies.
Yeah, at the same time. Yeah.
Exactly, in the same time. This dude is, like, everywhere, man.
He must not sleep, or else it's really easy for him to write this stuff. I don't know. He's everywhere. Like I said before, he's doing this Boom Studio stuff. He's, pretty much the linchpin of 52, writing Annihilation. I don't know, man. He's ubiquitous. He's everywhere.
No wonder he's so cranky.
Hey, I would be cranky too if I had to write, 80 books. I mean, what do you think Brian Michael Bendis is going to... No, okay, I kid. Oh, my God. The ramifications of Annihilation, do you think they're actually going to show up in the Marvel books themselves, or are we going to have some sort of next series after Annihilation to go with that, because it would make sense to perhaps after Civil War have the FF deal with this, because, again, I mean, it's sort of like the Ran-Thanagar War when you think about it. The Ran-Thanagar War, well, this is partly because the Hawkman issues were late, I understand that, but with the Ran-Thanagar War that led up to Infinite Crisis, you really didn't see much interaction with the characters that are usually associated with those two worlds until after, or at least midway through, the Ran-Thanagar War. With Annihilation, if Civil War is happening before Annihilation, which is what people are, you know, being led to believe here, are we going to see the FF involved in possibly the aftermath once Civil War is all done in that and we've got, you know, a couple issues to kill?
You'd almost think that they'd have to. If they're really going with making Annihilation matter, I think it would be pretty foolish of Marvel to not at least deal with some of the ramifications in some of their other books in the aftermath.
You know, I almost feel like this is... I can't believe they're doing this at this time right now. Because both of these stories are their own, or could be their own big events. You know, I almost feel like this story is kind of getting the shaft put to the side, because Civil War has turned out to be a lot more popular than I think Marvel expected it to be. And it almost seems a shame. Like I said, it's a shame that because a big cosmic-spanning story like this just begs for the inclusion of the Fantastic Four or some of the other heroes. You know, like you said, it's Avengers and Kree Skull War. I mean, they've taken part in cosmic conflicts like this. I almost feel bad that we're not getting those characters in this storyline. So I don't know if we'll get this after that's over with, but it seems like this is going to be done by then anyway, so I don't know.
Well, I hate to say it, but this actually ties a little bit into what we talked about on episode 14.5. The fact that Civil War was a last-minute decision, it's very well possible that event that they had planned before they planned Civil War might have very well tied into Annihilation. At the last second they decided, this sounds really awesome, let's go with this instead. We don't know. We will never know. But it would certainly explain why a lot of characters are absent from Annihilation.
All we know is, yeah, Miller and Bendis said it was shite, so I don't know. Whatever that other plan was, that's all we know about it. But, yeah, like I said, it seems almost silly to have two gigantic, you know, events going on concurrently. It seems like, I don't know, dividing their talent up or some kind of problem. Because this could have been, or, you know, could still be, I guess, but Annihilation itself could have been a very huge, huge deal.
Yeah, definitely.
And without all the, you know, without the major characters, let's face it, without the Earth heroes, you know, it's a little bit of a kind of also-ran series.
What do you think, Kramer?
Yeah, I think it's kind of strange that they're running both of these big events at the same time. Annihilation kind of seems to be getting the shaft, but maybe they'll boost it up a little bit to kind of fill the holes left by Civil War's delays.
Okay, yeah, that actually I could really see, because Giffen is, like we've stated before, he's a workhorse. There are not going to be any delays in Annihilation. That much I'll guarantee. This thing's going out as is. You know, they've got a couple issues in the bag already. I would not be surprised, because they've had this in the works for a while.
Right. And at least this is only one book that they have to tie everything together in, not the entire Marvel product line.
Well, yeah. This has something to do with the statement that was made when Annihilation was first actually announced. Even before Civil War was announced, they stated that they want the Marvel cosmic heroes to sort of stand on their own legs, to not have to be associated all the time with the typical Earth heroes that you would expect. I'm not quite sure if that's a good move, though, because by putting these cosmic heroes in their own little pocket, they're really distancing themselves from any sort of association you would have with the rest of the Marvel U.
Yeah, definitely. The Marvel's cosmic stuff has always been kind of a niche stuff within a further one, so yeah, I don't know why they aren't trying to tie it in a little more, but...
Yeah, this is, I mean, part of the reason that I've never really been in the cosmic stories that much, and this is the same thing again for DC, because the all their space characters too, the Rand, Thanagar, War, and all that stuff, that was my least interest, you know, I was least interested in that mini, because those characters just out in space meeting weird aliens, I don't know, there's just something about that it doesn't really work for me. So I think that they need some kind of tie-in with these other characters, at least on some level. I mean, obviously we have Nova being involved here, but, you know, he's never been a major player, really, in the Marvel Universe proper. He's more of a kind of a B-level character, I think. But yeah, I don't know. Whatever they're going to do, it's more interesting than they have been lately, so we'll hope for the best.
I certainly do indeed hope for the best. So, after this Annihilation number one, are you picking up Annihilation number two?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested enough to see what's going to happen. You know, events like this, I'm hoping that it's going to be solid all the way through and that the story doesn't just go off the deep end at some point. But right now I'm in for number two.
And I would certainly be in for number two as well, because, well, it's within my budget now, you know, now that I don't have any Civil War titles to buy, so... I could certainly afford it, and it's only one issue, like we stated before, so no tie-ins, and that's probably the way that they should have done Civil War in the first place, but I'm not even going to talk about that. But anyway, yeah, no, I mean, I think we got some decent stuff going here with Annihilation, and hopefully it will continue, and hopefully the art will be, you know, on par for the next couple of series, because quite frankly, again, even though I was a fan of the Collins stuff, I'm liking the DeVito stuff, and I'd like to see some consistency there and no rushing. Because, well, when you rush, that's when you get the half-ass storyline going on. Because, well, when the art's rushed, the writing seems like it's rushed, and everything's all rushed in the end. But I doubt that's really going to happen with Annihilation.
What has, just as an aside, you're talking about the artwork here, has this guy done a lot of other stuff in the industry? Because I haven't heard of that name before.
I've heard of him. In fact, actually, let me take a look here online quickly.
Just and I'm see. Even like I'm even assuming things saying it's him because it's Andrea,
yeah,
or Andrea. I don't know if it's a guy or not. You know, I don't know.
The only other thing that I remember him being associated with is the Thing series with Dan Slott.
Okay.
Was he the penciler on that whole series?
I believe so.
Okay, yeah, I like that stuff. That makes sense, Nart.
Well, for most of the series, he was. He left near the very end, where I think I'm pretty sure Chris Bautista was the guy who did the rest of that, but I'm not entirely sure. Let's see. I'm at his website right now, so let me see what he has for portfolio. Great, it's got music. Fantastic. all right, let's see. We got. He's got covers, he's got pages. Okay. You know what, on second thought, let's see if perhaps it's in his biography. See, I love it when you go to portfolio and you expect to find, you know, what the guy's done in the past, but it's not really there.
Well he's an Italian artist. I guess I think he's pretty decent on this series. I don't have any complaints about the artwork. It fits the story. You said that definitely a serious dark tone to things, and I guess I can attribute that to the colorist as well. He's in a very dark palette.
Well, they certainly picked the right colorist for the job, and actually, yeah, who is the colorist again? Just so I can actually remember.
Laura Villari, who again, I have no idea who that is.
Exactly. Well, that's actually a good thing, that they seem to be going with the new names here as opposed to established ones. You know what? Let me go to his wiki, because this is ridiculous. His own website takes like 80 years
to find out what he's done. Screw it. We'll look it up later.
Okay, here we go. I got it. All right. Yeah, he's done the interiors, obviously, for Annihilation. He did Captain America and the Falcon, number 8. He did Thing 1 through 5, Thor issues 80 to 85, He did 7 and 8 on Young Avengers. Oh, wow. I didn't realize he did Young Avengers. Huh, okay. That actually makes sense. Stormbreaker, the saga of Beta Ray Bill, numbers 1 through 6. He did the What If Aunt May Had Died Instead of Uncle Ben storyline that they did in the What If series. Mm. And he also worked for CrossGen. He did some Scion, and he did Wrath, and The First. So that's the stuff that he's done in the past. So
cool.
Thor and Young Avengers, I guess, would be the two biggest ones out of that he's
Speaking
done.
Of which, though, where is Beta Ray Bill? What's ever happened to that guy? He should be in here kicking somebody's ass.
That's a good question, actually. I forget. Did he lose his powers when Asgard exploded?
I'm not too sure, because I didn't read that the Thor disassembled.
Yeah, I just remember, the last thing I think I remember reading him in was, like, the old Simonson Thor issues. I don't know, it's been quite a while. I don't know what he's done or what he's up to or what powers he has or doesn't have, but he's a badass cosmic guy. He should be in here beating some alien heads.
Thor plucked him from the battlefield, and empowered as he was by this point, refused to let him return to fight over his live protests, and blade him to remember... Okay, yeah. Doesn't say anything here about him not having powers anymore, so... Oh, and actually, there's a Beta Ray Bill series starting up.
Well...
Michael Avon Oeming. In December 2006, there's going to be a Beta Ray Bill series starting up, so... Hey, that works for me. Well, at least we'll see him in the...
They better get him in this Annihilation, that's all I gotta say.
I hope so. I certainly do. Yeah. All right, well, I think that's pretty much going to wrap it up here for this particular episode. I think we basically talked about it enough here, and I'm glad to see that we actually enjoyed it. And in the future, hey, I mean, who knows with this. We'll be announcing a next 22 pages in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to discuss it with a couple of buddies and see whether or not we want to do one particular thing or another. But as soon as we do know what we're going to do, we'll make sure to let you know on that. But nevertheless, first of all, Matt Kramer, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Indeed, for the first time, and probably not the last, so, as you definitely did a good job here. And Matt S., otherwise known as Matt Number 2, thank you again for joining us.
Oh, never Number 2, man.
Okay, fine. You're number 1.1. How about that?
Ah, well. I'm my own separate person, but hey, what the hell?
There you go.
All righty.
Fine. You're enjoying your Milwaukee. All right. Both of you enjoying your Milwaukee, and that's all that matters. So let me go through the usual rundown here. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicgeekspeak.com/forum. And I want to graciously thank Comic Geekspeak for hosting the forums for us. Don't forget to vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. We're having some troubles with iTunes again. What a shock. But hopefully we will have things up and running there again soon, as PodPress managed to redirect it to a feed that doesn't exist. So I'm in contact with iTunes, and hopefully we'll have that fixed for you pretty soon. Until then, feeds.feedburner.com/comictimingpodcast. Just manually add it to your iTunes. You'll be able to get the episodes pretty easily that way. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcasts.com. Also, don't forget to check out The Furnace over at wardshaper.com. Wardshaper is an affiliate of the show. And once again, as of next week, I believe we will have his brand new segment about villains premiering on the show. So that should be a lot of fun there. And hopefully coming soon, we'll have an announcement on David Price's future product, which will update you on soon. And once again, dudes, thanks for joining us. It's been a lot of fun, and you'll be back soon, I am certain of. So once again, Matt, thank you for that. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. No problem.
And as always, there's always time for comics.
Who's this, what's your butts? What is it?
But, oh, you see, What's Her Futz was in an issue of Howard the Duck.
He's Sleepo Gamera. Oh, yeah. That was a giant space turtle. I haven't seen this. Who is this? Gamora? Is that? I don't know. Where does she come from?
She is from the old Starlin Warlock stuff. the maggots and all of that. The Church of United Church of Universal Truth or
Scientologists.
Yeah. She was, and she's basically like Thanos' foster daughter.
Ah.
He raised her to distract Warlock enough so he could take over the universe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Distract as in, you know, randomly have sex with her.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Because that's what distraction and complex is what it's all about, man. Hell yeah.